I will just say, gimme, 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 gimme.
Episode 39 of There Is No Offseason, a podcast from Baseball Prospectus focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley, and I am joined by BP's fantasy manager and someone who can't even remember every Chris Bostic trade, Brett Sayer, and my fellow authors, a man whose infographics fail to take parallel dimensions into account, Mauricio Rubio, and cooked vegetable hater Craig Goldstein. Good evening, guys. Say hi to everyone where they can find you on the internets, and then tell them hi after they tell you where you can find them on the interwebs. And Brett, let's start with you.
Hi. You can find me on the internet at baseballperspectus.com and thedynastyguru.com and on the tweet box at dynastyguru. Mel?
Hi. You can find me at baseballperspectus.com and on Twitter at mrubio52. Craig.
Hi, you can find me at Baseball Prospectus and the Dynasty Guru, and you can find me on Twitter at CD Goldstein. That's CD as in content deleter, Goldstein. Ben?
Hi, where you can find me on the interwebs is also at Baseball Prospectus and the Dynasty Guru, and you can find me at Ben Carsley on Twitter. You will not find me at Good Intro Reader. You can find this podcast on Twitter via the aptly named at Tino Podcast handle. And you can ask us questions and talk to us about your feelings by emailing us at tinopodcast@gmail.com. And something that I think is quite exciting is that now you can talk to us about your feelings and ask us questions on our Facebook page, which is it's a pretty big fucking deal, if we're being honest. So with that beautifully executed introduction out of the way, let's move on to the meat of the podcast. This week, we're going to be discussing Dynasty League second baseman. We're going to talk some current events and obviously get to the biggest news of the week, which involves Nori Aoki and Johnny Gomes. And I think we're going to have a little fun along the way. But first, as we do so often, we are going to begin with reader emails. And our first reader email is from Cody. Cody says, "Dear Craig et al., at what point, if at all, do you take possible position switches into account when deciding on keepers? If I need a shortstop but have a second baseman long-term, how much should I adjust Baez's value? Should Bryant's long-term position matter, or just should I see if his bat becomes awesome and figure things out later?" So this is really good because it's a unique question in that it addresses Javier Baez's positional versatility moving forward, and I don't think we've seen that anywhere yet. So, Craig, since Cody addressed this to you and then et al., why don't you lead us off?
Yeah, I like Cody's style, personally. I don't think that you need to weigh this very heavily. I mean, obviously, it's a factor, but you should care more about how good the player is going to be than kind of where they're lined up. I mean, obviously, we all have access to the bat signal, and I feel like we get so many questions that are like, I don't have a backup third baseman. And it's like, well, who cares, right? I mean, obviously, it's always good to have a contingency plan, but like, your contingency plan can be, I'm going to trade from depth and acquire someone if I need to, but like, I'm going to roll with the best talent right now. I think fantasy players in general kind of put a lot of emphasis on having like a backup available. And that's ideally what you use your multi-positional guys for, that you can like slide them around when you need to. But like, I'm not one who puts a huge emphasis on looking that far into the future at positional value, because we do end up, you know, with guys that either stick at a position we weren't expecting or move to a different one. I mean, for all we know, you know, the Cubs might throw Bryant in left field, put Baez at third, and Alcantara at second. I mean, I don't think that's likely, but that doesn't mean it can't happen. And if you rely on, you know, Baez being a second baseman, it might not work out that way. So I would just worry more about positional eligibility in the very short term, as in the season that's coming up, than anything really beyond that. Brett, different thoughts?
No, I'm going to go one step further and say, when it comes to cases like Bryant and Baez, it matters absolutely zero. We're talking about guys who, like Craig said, we're talking about guys who we have absolutely no idea what their end position is going to be. People freaking out about Baez not getting second base eligibility forever and ruining their plans need to take into account that he's played 16 games in the minors at second base and I think 30 at the major league level. So roles need to be slowed a little bit here. He could very well be the shortstop. He could be the third baseman. He could be an outfielder. It doesn't really matter. What matters is whether he hits. And that's the question up for debate, I guess. But same with Bryant. Wouldn't surprise me if he's a third baseman. Wouldn't surprise me if he's an outfielder. Frankly, it wouldn't surprise me if he's a first baseman at some point. Not to say that he couldn't play any of those other positions, but we just don't know. So unless you are talking about a league with extremely strict eligibility and extremely deep rosters and guys that we know are not going to move off the position, it shouldn't be factored at all. Mal?
I mean, it's always tough following up, Brett, when it comes to that. I mean, this is something that we've talked about a lot in Flags Fly Forever. We've already starting to get those questions in about, you know, keeper spots and, you know, best player available versus positional scarcity. And I mean, I guess, you know, to kind of sum up what Craig and Brett have said, and, you know, I'll just leave it at this. It would take a lot for me to leave 260 and 30 home runs on the table, no matter what the position is. And if that's kind of where I think Bryant's going to be, I can't really see many arguments for valuing positional value over what Bryant's production is going to be. So he might be a third baseman, he might be an outfielder, there's a couple of different places that he can end up, but I think that bat's going to be fine just wherever it ends up. So, Ben?
I think we're going to need to have a sort of like entire disclaimer article before next year's rankings, because just everything in terms of positional rankings is the most confusing thing ever to listeners, to readers, and everything. So you guys covered Baez and Bryant. I agree with everything you said. I'm just going to quickly lay out the sort of positional value chart that we use. So when we evaluate fantasy players, starting from most valuable position to least valuable, we go catcher, shortstop, second baseman, third baseman, outfielder, first baseman, utility. Just so everyone knows and everyone has that out of the way. When you're dealing with prodigious talents like Baez and Bryant, totally agree. I don't care where they play. I love them. When you're dealing with mid-grade to lower talents, I had this question today on an article, and it was the rare good question I got on an article in terms of how do you slide value based on where the player might move to next. Yeah, of course we take that into account. If Jerickson Profar moves, he's going to shortstop. So we're not really worried about him moving. You know, if Jed Jerko moves, he's going from second to third. Is it a step back? Yes, but it's not huge. If Evan Gattis moves, he's going from catcher to outfielder. That's a much, much bigger drop. So there's not an exact science or an exact scale on which we weigh these things, but yes, we take them into account, is how I would wrap that in a neat little bow.
Just a quick addition, and I think that's a great point, Ben. I mean, I got one at a comment at Dynasty Guru that was talking about Chris Bryant and Chris Davis, and they're both listed at third base there. And I mean, it's similar to what you were just saying, is that if Chris Bryant moves, he's going to go to the outfield, which certainly is a step back. But if Chris Davis moves, he's going to go to first base, presumably. And the slide in terms of what's available there in terms of positional scarcity is a big difference, even in outfield, because a lot of standard leagues use five outfielders. So I think that's definitely a good point to hit. And the other thing I would say is, just based on this question, he says, if I need a shortstop but have a long-term second baseman, how should I adjust Baez's value? And the answer is that not only should you not because of his talent, but also because if you're selling him, you should be selling him at his highest value. And if he qualifies for shortstop, that's what you should be selling him at. I understand that he might not be worth as much to you because you have a long-term second baseman in the future, but you should be selling him then to teams that want a long-term second baseman if that's where you think he's going, and you shouldn't really adjust his value because of it. So I just wanted to address that specifically.
That is a good point. All right, I'm going to move us on because I don't have it in me to talk about positional value anymore. So let's go to our second question of the week, which is from Tim. Tim says, Tino guys, interested in your overall thoughts on Jurickson and Profar in Dynasty and Keeper formats. You've come to the right place, Tim, because There Is No Offseason is a Baseball Prospectus podcast focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. More specifically, would you trade Severino and Ref Snyder for Profar? Profar's contract runs through 2017. After they eclipse rookie eligibility, players in my league get 4 years of contract. Thank you for taking the time, Tim. We've talked about Profar a decent amount on this podcast, but I don't think really in the past few months. So, Mao, I will kick it out to you. Now that we're getting closer and closer to the beginning of the 2015 season, how are you valuing Profar? And would you trade Severino, who's a no-doubt top 100 prospect, and Ref Snyder, who's probably in the 150 to 200 range, for Profar?
I know in redrafts that we kind of put him in the one-star box, like kind of towards the bottom of our rankings. And, you know, this is going to be a big prove-it year for him. The shoulder injury, you know, we talked about that last year. Like, it's going to be a concern. We're going to, I mean, he's just going to have to get through it. In terms of, like, dynasty leagues and all of that, Brett, which we'll get to that later, got aggressive in a good way on his ranking there, I think. And I think I view him similarly in terms of value where Brett ranked him. So he's a guy that I'm targeting when I can in certain leagues. So if I can get him for the price that you just listed, Ref Snyder and Severino, yeah, I'm pulling that trigger. I know, you know, Ref Snyder is not exactly, he's not an exciting, neither one of these guys is an exciting fantasy prospect. And I mean, Severino's got a couple of questions about whether or not he's going to be a starter or a reliever. I mean, there's a lot of risk there with him. I pulled the trigger on this deal, and Profar is a guy that I'm going after pretty aggressively. So, Brett, what about you? You can go ahead and start your love letter to Profar.
I'm sure we'll get there later in the episode, but I will just say, gimme, 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 gimme. Yeah.
I love this Brett. This is a great Brett.
Yeah, this Brett is tremendous. I like it.
I would do this trade in less than a second, and then I would offer it back to him, make him accept it, and then have him offer it to you again so you could accept it the second time.
That's so inefficient.
It certainly is. Craig?
I agree with Brett, but I'll say that I am very cognizant of the concerns about Profar, that he is still hurt and he chose to rehab the injury as opposed to surgery, which is definitely not a problem. You always choose rehab ahead of surgery, so that's not surprising. And that there is less control for Profar in this scenario is obviously a downside, especially since, you know, if he doesn't produce this year, just as he gets back into the swing of things at an MLB level, you're talking about 2 years of valuable Profar versus 4 years of the other guys. All that being said, I think Severino's a reliever, and I think Ref Snyder is not very good. So those two things combined make this super easy. So, yes, I would absolutely do that. Ben?
I will say that I think out of the four Tino members, I am the low man on Profar, not because I doubt his talent at all, just because I am sincerely concerned in terms of his injury history at this point. And that being said, this is such a goddamn no-brainer that I just, yes, just do it. This is not even remotely close.
It's like a bat signal question.
It really is like a bat signal question. I mean, there's no trade on earth that Ref Snyder should be a deal breaker for. And you're trading a 60 to 80 range prospect for Profar, who, if he were still prospect eligible, would easily still be a top 10 guy. So this isn't difficult. Don't overthink it. Go in this specific instance, you just stop. Behave. Is anyone else a little lower? Obviously, everyone's a little lower on Profar, but I'm interested that everyone else seems to think he's an incredible value buy this offseason. Do you want to get into acceptable deals for Profar now? Do you want to save that for later in the episode since this is the second base?
Yeah, let's save it for the second base discussion.
Watch Brett torture us as he decides, just like last week with Ortiz.
I can already imagine.
Oh, actually, no, that's good. That's a good one. All right, yeah, that sounds good. Okay. All right, well, we'll stick with Brett then, but we'll move on to the next question. And this is from friend of the podcast, Dave. Dave says, "Hello, gentlemen. Just wanted to get your thoughts on how you deal with players or teams that start the season slow or get the injury bug in a dynasty format. How long before you panic? Do you start making moves immediately if you had planned on contending? What is a good time to measure where you are comparatively to the league when you keep seeing your team's name at the bottom of the standings? Oh, and make Mao say..." Mao, can you say it?
Hold on.
Oh,
he was emailed up, yeah. No, I wasn't looking at the email.
Thank you. For science, Dave. Brett, why don't you take this off since I already said that... Take this off? Wow, Freudian slip. God, get your popcorn.
I thought Brett was the one who had been drinking.
Of course I'm drinking. Also, Brett, can't wait to see you in Arizona. Why don't you take this question?
Yeah, the easy answer is you never panic. When you panic, bad things happen. If you have injuries and you're at the beginning of the season, you still think you can contend, it would have to be quite a deal, and you'd have to have, obviously depends on your depth that you have at the minor league level or at the reserve level, but making big deals either to push all in or to push towards rebuilding in the first maybe month and a half, 2 months of the season when you are going against your plan coming into the year is how you really screw up with a dynasty team. So it's something you really should avoid if you can help it. But you should always go into the season with kind of guys in mind on your roster that you can flip for depth if you have injury issues. So that's the long and short of it. Craig.
Yeah, I mean, I think you said it best when you said not to panic, and I'll add another reason not to panic is that it's fantasy baseball and not something supremely important. So just keep that in mind when trying not to panic. I mean, that said, I don't have anything really to add beyond what Brett said, so I'll pass it on to Ben.
Since it's second base week, don't panic and don't Joe panic from a fantasy point of view. Just don't panic. Panic at the Disco, also not a great band. Why? It's his name, Craig. Grow up.
I know what it was. Just not happy with you.
So you're coming out and saying that Joe Panic is a fantasy asset is literally what you just said verbatim in quotes.
This pun joke after your Caesar crap on Twitter this afternoon is unacceptable.
Don't know why you're surprised. Mal, any hot takes?
Brett, can you say don't panic again, but slower?
Don't panic.
I like the inflection.
Thank you.
Is that going to be your new ringtone?
Yeah, 100%. I'm doing it right now, actually.
Wow, that's really creepy. Oh, God. All right, well, I'm panicking, so I'm going to move us along. And this is actually, I think this is a Tino first. We're going back to Cody. So, Cody, congratulations. I believe you are the first person to comprise more than one reader email segment emails.
Well, to be fair, I mean, I think he submitted 5 questions. So even if we answer 2 of them, he's still only hitting 400.
Well, you only hitting 400. I mean,
I think we're going to answer. No, he sent 2 emails, 5 questions total, and I think we're going to answer 4 of them.
Are we going to... Oh, so you want to go back to the music question.
No, I don't want to go back to that one.
Before, I didn't know.
I think we'll settle for these 2, and we'll answer 3 of his 5 inquiries.
Okay.
And I think that's nice for him. I think he needs that. Okay. Cody asks, how long would Ben and Craig remain at Sandwich Prospectus before they got poached by Sacer-friendly organizations? Imagine Saber, but Sandwich instead of baseball. Would you be in sandwich design, scouting for new sandwich types, or in the front office of the company? I'm pretty comfortable in saying that I think I would be in the front office and that I think Craig would be a sandwich scout. Is that fair?
Yeah, I would like to dabble in sandwich design, but that's probably not a strong suit, more of just a an interest. But I think the scouting is where I think you nailed it personally.
Well,
yeah.
The nice thing about you being CEO and me being COO is that really we have a lot of latitude to do what
we
want.
Yeah, we have that freedom. That's true.
So which, quite frankly, is what drew me to Sandwich Prospectus in the first place.
I have a question for Sandwich Prospectus. Are you guys going to be in with Big Sandwich, or are you mom and pop shop? Like, what's the business plan here?
Well, as COO, Craig, I think I can handle this one. And
I'm comfortable with that.
Frankly, I think that at this time we're not prepared to answer, you know, those sort of delicate business questions. We are not going public. We're a privately owned entity, so I don't feel the need to disclose any of our venture backing. I don't feel the need to disclose any of our founders. Right now, you can just consider us a positive voice in the sandwich community, and I just want our listeners to know that we care about them and their sandwiches.
I mean, I frankly think that answer was a little bit obtuse.
Well, that's fine. That's probably why you're not a member of Sandwich Perspective.
No, I'm
he's watching too much of the Tom Brady press conference.
If you watched any of the Tom Brady press conference, you watched too much of the Tom Brady press conference.
I feel like he could defend it for trying to get, you know, a good laugh out of him saying "my balls" repeatedly over and over
again. It's not a bad point. I feel like the people who enjoy this podcast probably also enjoyed the Tom Brady press conference. Look at his balls. Brett, do you have a sandwich prospectus position in mind at all?
I think I'm just a consultant.
Oh, you smart, savvy son of a bitch.
Yeah, that is smart.
Yeah. Mal, it's okay. You'll work your way up, buddy.
No, I don't want to be I'm not applying at all.
What if we made you like head of international sandwich scouting?
No, that wouldn't work.
No, really?
No, I like that head of international. Yeah, because we do incorporate tacos.
No, it's the other way around. Tacos incorporate you.
Which aren't sandwiches.
See, they're the same thing. The point is that they're equivalent, and
they're not equivalent.
Not really.
Okay, this is a. That's a boardroom meeting that we're
gonna Yeah, that's right. Let's not make this public. Okay.
Yeah, you guys don't have to get into the empanada exploration committee.
Also before Thank sandwiches.
You. Mal could head that up if he was interested.
It would have to be a pretty substantial offer. I mean, I'm willing to sell out. There's just always a price of it.
We know. we got that a while ago. Let's get Christina Carl on here. All right. Anyway, let's move on to the final question from Cody. If the four of you were adrift in a boat with enough food and water for three people to survive until found, what would you tell Craig's family? I would tell Craig's family that Mao was a really good man and a friend of all of us, but there just wasn't room on the Sandwich Prospectus boat for him.
No, that's understandable. I would also tell Ben's family that he was an asshole, and I had no hard feelings about, you know, leaving him.
My family knows.
So. Yeah.
Matt would tell Ben's family, I kept his eyes. I kept those for later.
Do you want them? I have them.
I feel like Mike would probably put a solid auction bid up for those. Mike's a big fan of referencing my eyes at strange times.
This is
by strange times, do you mean all times?
I was going to say, I guess there's not really a great time for an adult male who has children to tell me that I have nice eyes, but... I don't hate it. I'm not going to lie.
Brett, so is no one going to tell Craig's family that he died valiantly protecting all of us from a army of coconut crabs?
I tickled as many as I could.
Yeah. Oh, wow. There are so many ways I could go with that.
That's how you get them to let go.
I'm aware of the cocoa crab tickling strategy.
I didn't have a halberd.
Well, that's why you have me. That's poor planning.
Oh, man. I would probably tell Craig's, you know, family that he died in a storm in Africa, which is a song by Enya. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to episode 39 of Tino. I hope you used that break to decide what you would tell Craig's family were he to pass away on his maiden voyage. And now we shall continue on with our positional fantasy series, and this week it's all about second base. So for those of you who are following along with us on baseballperspectives.com, you know that on a weekly basis we are rolling out a new position, basically trying to cater to every possible fantasy league imaginable. So on a positional basis, we have rankings for 2015, three-year rankings for NL and AL-only leagues. We have a get-to-know column, which discusses prospects. We have a lay-of-the-land column that really gives you a sort of general overview of that position as a whole. Tale of the tape that pits two players at the position against each other. Really anything you want to know, unless you play in a league that shoots you if you consider average a valid category. Other than that, we've got you covered. But per usual, we're going to let Brett talk about his Dynasty League rankings for the position. So, Brett, keys, proverbial, hand, proverbial, take them.
Thank you. So we'll jump right in here. The second base is a strange position. We have some new names towards the top and some old names falling down the list. And in the middle, we have a bunch of pretty boring guys that people tend to overlook but are rather valuable. So starting at the very, very top, number one on the list, which is going to be a shock to anyone who has ever listened to this podcast, is Anthony Rendon, who is quite good at baseball and a handsome man. Do any of you disagree with Rendon being at the top, either for a real reason or the fake reason that he's not going to be second base eligible at some point in his future and that should render him meaningless?
I don't have an issue with him being one, but my question is, do you consider him his own tier, or is this just because you wanted to write about him?
It's a little bit of both. There's a little bit of separation for me between him and Cano and Altuve. It's not really I would say it's a 1 versus 1A situation, not a 1 versus 2 situation.
Okay, that's fine. I think he should be grouped with Cano, but I don't have an issue with him being first.
Yeah, I was going to say I'd have Rendon and Cano together and Altuve probably on his own.
Yep, same.
Second tier.
Yeah, frankly, the difference between...
makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, for me, you can't tell by how the list looks, but Cano is closer to Rendon than he is to Altuve, in my mind.
And okay. The other thing I disagree with is that Ben Zobrist is not here and ranked number one, and what the hell is that about?
Where's Javi?
He's hiding.
Also, this is a shitty infographic, let me tell you. I don't even...
Look, I mean, you know, I don't think the vertices are lined up correctly, and I just really, I'm not with it.
You could rotate each label 90 degrees. Whatever, I don't know. Whatever.
Wow, we sabotaged this, 45 seconds into the segment?
that didn't take very long.
Good work. All right.
Well, this has been bubbling up. I mean, I just want to say, before we give the keys back to Brett, and I apologize for this, but Ben's unfiltered piece that went up today that will be linked to the podcast episode was inspired. And
agreed.
Yeah, I might print it out and hang it up in my office, to be honest.
I appreciate that. It'll be the best graphic design work you see all day. Brett,
for one,
you.
Yeah, I've spent the afternoon being really, really pissed at Gandalf, but I mean, that's
just that's, take the goddamn Eagles, right? Like, what is that about?
I remember somebody like literally wrote 500 words explaining why they couldn't take the Eagles, and it doesn't matter. Like that was it was it's yeah.
We've spent 4,000 words explaining why we can't rank Baez here. That doesn't matter either. So.
So all right. So getting back to the list, Cano. We know the power has been down for the last season and a half or so. How concerned are you about the power, and how much power do you think we can expect over the next 2 to 3 years, Ben?
I don't think you are ever going to see Yankees Cano type power, like the real in his prime Robinson Cano type power. But I'm also fairly comfortable projecting that he'll hit for a little more power than he did last year, which I understand if you want to tell me that is a cop-out answer. But, I mean, he's 32. He's really not that old yet. And to 14 in the homer department is not a drop that can be explained in and of itself by Safeco. So do I think we're getting back to the consistent upper 20s, low 30s? No, but I'd be surprised if he doesn't push for 20.
Yeah, oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry, but if he puts up like his 2007 season where he hit 306, 19 home runs, 93 runs scored, and 97 RBIs, that's pretty good.
Cano's a major target for me this year. I think he's going to be undervalued because his season last year was only good and not magnificent from a fantasy point of view, but I'm still a big fan.
I completely agree. Whenever you have a player who is on the wrong side of 30 who has a little bit of a down season, there is always a buying opportunity, especially when they have been a superstar for a while. Especially in Cano's case, because nothing is there, you know, he doesn't have really any injury red flags. So,
and you know. I mean, his down year was 314, 382, 454, 14 homers, 10 steals, 82 RBI, 77 runs. That's his worst season since
ever.
2008.
Yeah.
I'll take that.
He hit two home runs the first 2 months of the season.
Not a lot.
And then he hit 12 the rest of the way, which isn't like dynamic, but as Ben was saying, I think, you know, 20 to 22 is not unreasonable given, you know, that he had such a power outage the first, you know, April and May. I mean, if he hits, you know, four homers in each of those months, you're basically there. So.
Yeah. So then that begs a similar question for Altuve. I mean, Altuve was just completely out of his mind in 2014. What level do we expect him to settle at going forward? I mean, Craig, in your mind, what is a par Altuve season over the next year or two?
God, you would ask me that because I'm the guy who wrote like that we should sell Altuve in July of last year, and people got really mad about it. I think something. I mean, I don't think it's like a season he's had before, but I think something in the 300 average range with 35 stolen bases and, I mean, what, 5 home runs? The runs in RBI, that's really hard to say because that, even that lineup is a completely boomer bust lineup right now. In the 80s in runs, he's gotten there twice in the last 3 years. I'd feel comfortable saying that. And then in the 40s or 50s in RBI. Does that sound reasonable?
Yeah, I think I'm right in the same spot. Anyone feel differently, either higher or lower?
Yeah, I think I've sort of been the Altuve defender. Not that I ever saw anything like his 2014 happening. Not trying to take credit for that. But basically, since Altuve's been good, I've been listening to everyone tell me why he's going to stop being good. And I think I agree with a lot of what Craig said, but I just think everything other than the average is like a wee bit conservative. I think 300 is right around the level he'd be at, but 5 homers, I mean, he's surpassed that 2 out of the last 3 years. True, it was only 7. But, you know, I think as he gets older, he could maybe push for 10. I think 35 steals, I think he can do better than that. I know he is not an absolute burner, but, I mean, he's proven to be an adept base stealer, at least in terms of quantity, so I think he could routinely be over 40. Run sounds right. RBI, you said 50, but he almost hit 60 last. Yeah, I guess 50 is right, so maybe I'm just sort of squirreling about a few homers and a few steals here, but I think more what I'm doing is pushing back against the idea that Altuve is going to keep regressing, because while he's not going to hit 340 again, he's going to be pretty damn good for a little while.
Ben, the question I have for you regarding the stolen bases, and this is really like the first high efficiency year that Altuve hit. So
right.
do you think he learned how to steal bases? Is that something that's going to be able to carry forward into the 40s?
Yep.
I'm here. Did you? Yeah, I didn't lose me. So, hello,
Mal. I would ask that question. Yeah, I'd ask the question again.
Okay. So, you know, last year was really the first year where he had a really high efficiency rate. You know, he's been a little bit low efficiency or right around, you know, 75% mark, I think. But do you think that's a skill that he's going to be able to carry forward, Ben? You know, do you think the 40 bases, stolen bases, comes because he's just learned how to read pitchers better?
Well, I think it's a combination of a few things. A, I think he's going to reach base not more than he did last year, but more than he did in 2012 or 2013. Yeah, I think the skill has clearly improved a little bit. I understand the argument that he'll slow down as he gets older, but I mean, he's only going to be, it's his age 25 season next year. So if you want to tell me he's going to really slow down in his later 20s, fine, but I don't see him falling off the cliff for a little while. So yeah, 56 steals, probably not going to happen again, but I think he can do better than the mid 30s, which is what he posted in 2012 and 2013. I'm comfortable with him in the low to mid 40s.
All right. So the natural next question here is, there's sort of a bit of a glut now. I think with the right ammo, you could make the argument for anyone from the 4 to probably 10 range as the next guy after Altuve on this list. So I'm curious to get all of your opinions. I mean, I have Ian Kinsler at number 4. Who would you guys have in the number 4 spot? Mal?
I would probably roll with Kinsler too. I mean, you know, I still like Jason Kipnis. I can see the flip-flop there. I'm not so sure about the case for D. Gordon at 10 for being right behind Altuve. And, you know, the same kind of goes for Colton Wong. You know, I understand that there could be a lot of growth there, and he's a young guy, and, you know, there's a lot of upside there. But I just think that the two guys that you have up top at 4 and 5, and I would actually probably even slide Dustin Pedroia down a little bit. But I think your 4 and 5 are the right choice there, and it's the right thought process in my mind.
All right. Ben?
No, I think this next tier is perfect. I don't really care how you rank them, but I think they need to be recognized over Profar because they have proven themselves and are sure things, but they all have injury concerns of their own, so I would not touch this at all.
Craig?
I'd have Kipnis fourth. And it's not, I know he had a down year last year, but he had the oblique injury. And I don't remember how you had it, heading into last year, but I would have imagined he was, either he was in the top three. I would have guessed based on the way his star was headed, and he's in his prime and he steals bases. He hits for, you know, mid teens power. I'm still very high on Jason Kipnis. I agree with Ben that this is the tier I would have. Although I think you can make an optimistic argument to put Colton Wong kind of at the back of it, but that relies a lot on him translating his ability to hit for average from the minors to the majors. But he showed he could hit for power and steal some bags. So I think you could argue him kind of in the tail end of this tier, but I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, that's fair. I am pretty optimistic about Wong's ability to raise that batting average. He just needs to show it before he moves up any higher on the list. And I think there's a good chance he could be in the top five next year. I mean, if he can raise that batting average up to the 280 range, which, you know, based on his natural hit tool and his minor league numbers, it's certainly possible. So,
I think he's a lot more likely to hit 280 than he is to necessarily hit kind of 12 home runs or whatever 12 home runs prorated is. Like, I don't know that power comes back in terms of home run. I mean, he can definitely hit it to the gaps and all of that, but I'd be very surprised if he hits it for the average the way he did last year.
Yeah, but then if the average comes up and the power goes down, then that should give him. No, but that should give him more stolen base opportunities as well. Absolutely. So there's a tie in there.
Absolutely.
So any of the guys in this tier that you would drop below sort of the 11 and 12 on the list are Neil Walker and Howie Kendrick. They're the nice safe options. They're never going to They're never going to be the, you know, top performer at the position, but they will play and they will give you stats, and especially in a deeper league, they're extremely valuable. Are there any guys in the top 10 that you would drop below Walker and Kendrick at this point? I'll go reverse, Craig.
I don't know. I really struggle with D. Gordon. I know it's kind of crazy to not have him, or to even have him 10th based on his steals last year. And it's not that I think he's a tremendous base stealer. I mean, technique and speed. But I kind of worry if he can hit to the point that he'll stay in the lineup. I mean, he was so, so bad the second half of last year. I know I've said this on the podcast before, but he had 4 walks all of the second half last year. And if he's not hitting, I mean, if he hits 250, that's fine, but there's a chance that he doesn't. So I tend not to know what to do with Gordon because, I mean, obviously if he can get on base even a decent amount, he's going to be well worth it in number of steals. I just think it's a really high beta profile. I mean, Dozier is the only guy with a 2020 year last year. I love Walker, though, and I'm far more confident in Walker repeating himself than Dozier, and I think you could make the argument that his consistency could put him in front of Dozier, but I certainly respect the Dozier's year and his age and his profile and what he's able to do offensively. So I guess not, but those are the two I would consider putting Walker in front of.
And Ben, same question.
I'm sorry, this is boring, but no. I there's no one I'm dropping. I just did the 3-year rankings from second base, and obviously because they're 3-year rankings, I had Profar below the Walker and Kendrick tier because we don't really know if he's going to play, and also because position eligibility is more important in that format because it's centered around the position for 3 years. So even if he moves to shortstop, it doesn't rank it second. So I had him below the tier, but other than that, I mean, this just looks very similar to what I had. And while I would love to insult you and tell you that you're bad, I think you're dead on here.
Mal?
I mean, yeah, again, boring vanilla, and I agree with Craig. I would probably put Walker above Gordon. I would not put him above Dozier, though. But that's, I mean, it's such a minor quibble. It's like one spot. So, I mean, this is a good tier.
Okay. So then let's continue to move down and kind of open this up a little bit. The sort of group that starts with Alcantara at 13 and goes through Jonathan Scope at 25. There are all kinds of players in this group. You have steady guys like Daniel Murphy and Chase Utley, who, you know, don't have a ton of upside at this point. You have prospects like Peraza and Dilson Herrera. You've got post-hype guys. You've got guys coming off bad years. If you had to, we'll play the stock game again. So if you guys had to pick one player from this 13 to 25 range who you thought was going to do a good job of increasing their value during the 2015 season for next year's list, who would that be? Craig?
I would take, you know, I'm going to take Aaron Hill. You and I had actually talked about him the other day on GChat, but he's someone who I think everyone is relatively down on. You and I are not. So I really like your ranking of him. I might even have him in front of Jed Jerko, who I'm not a big fan of. But I mean, this is a guy who's shown impact ability in terms of fantasy before, and I recognize that he's had some down years, but he's also shown the ability to kind of adjust from some down years, and he's playing in a great park to hit. The team around him is not ideal, but he's someone who I think is who can put together a season similar to what he did kind of 3 years ago, and I think if he does that, given his situation being in Chase Field, and when people remember that he's actually a pretty good offensive player, he'll kind of fly up rankings at least a little bit. I understand it's a dynasty ranking and he's not the youngest guy, but I still think he could improve his stock considerably.
I agree with everything you just said. The one thing, we actually mentioned this on Flags Fly Forever earlier in the week. The one thing to remember about Aaron Hill is that when you glance at his stat page, it's easy to get lost in looking at his last two seasons as failures. But his 2013 season was actually pretty good.
2013 was great.
Yeah, when he was on the field, he was great in 2013. He was just only on the field for half the season, but he still had double-digit homers and had a solid batting average. It's really just the 2014 season, and I completely agree that he can bounce back in a pretty nice way. Ben, what about you?
Well, Hill was my guy, so fuck off. if I had to pick the next guy, I guess I'll sort of like game the system here and say that I think the player from this tier other than Hill who's likely to have the biggest jump in ranking next year is Jose Peraza. Not even because I think he's going to light the world on fire in 2015, but I think he'll do enough in 2015 to cement himself as the Braves' starting second baseman moving forward, and he'll really position himself well for 2016. So I think, you know, at this time next year, I think he'll probably be a borderline top 15 guy. I do think he is getting overrated, not by us, but by some other just publications and by general ADP for 2015, because I don't see him getting more than, 300 at-bats this year. And even if he gets those 300 at-bats, I mean, he's nowhere near his prime. But like I said, you know, I think he does enough to cement himself as the guy there. And once you're talking about 550 plate appearances for 2016, then he starts to get pretty attractive.
Now?
Well, fuck you both, because Peraza was my choice after fucking Craig. Take Aaron Hill. So I'm just going to go ahead and take Rougned Odor. Not because, you know, and you touched on this a little bit in your piece. His real life value is much higher than his fantasy value. And, you know, there's probably not enough power for him to ever be a top five guy. But I think he can start sneaking into the top 10 with a pretty solid season this year. You know, I think he's going to be a 300 hitter. I do think that he's going to provide you pretty solid value in some of the counting stats. And it's never really going to be spectacular, I don't think. But I think there's enough talent there for him to be, you know, for him to really increase his value this year.
All right. Before we move on to the bottom of the list, does anyone disagree that Peraza is the best second base prospect for fantasy right now?
Nope.
Okay.
Who are the...
talking about Herrera and Wall, and it drops from there, but...
I think you could make the case that Herrera is at least right there with him, given that he has a more well-rounded profile, but he doesn't have anything as dynamic as Peraza's speed either.
This I agree with.
The thing I worry about with Herrera is he has very, very limited exposure above high A, and I think he's going to get played at the major league level this year and be exposed. I'm still really surprised he got time last year. Brett, I know you're a Mets fan, so maybe you can speak more to this, but I think they're being a little too aggressive with him. I don't know how you feel.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see any playing time for him in 2015 just because all his natural positions are blocked. Daniel Murphy's contract
runs
out.
You mean all one of them?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but you're also talking about the Mets who are playing Wilmer Flores at shortstop. I mean, Herrera.
Then he's not blocked. I mean.
Yeah, but I mean, well, Herrera can play shortstop as well defensively as Flores can.
So can I.
Right, so I'm just saying. So in that case, he's not blocked.
He's not. Yeah, he's not blocked, but I don't see them moving Flores off for Herrera. But either way, I don't see him getting more than maybe 150 plate appearances this year. I think I was very surprised he got the call last year, but I'm pretty excited about his offensive profile. I think, you know, he showed a lot of improvement in 2014, and his numbers were ridiculous. But obviously those are just a small sample of minor league numbers. He can contribute everywhere, and if Daniel Murphy would have been traded this offseason, Herrera would have been probably 4 to 5 spots higher on this list, since he would be looking at current year playing time. But he's definitely someone to watch depending on how he's valued in leagues. But I do have him a tick behind Peraza.
So I have no issue with him being behind Peraza, but just to Ben's point about upper level minors experience, and I agree with that point about Herrera. I just would also apply it to Peraza, who has 195 plate appearances at AA versus Herrera's 278. So just by the same token that I would expect Herrera to struggle mightily if given time in the majors this year, I do believe Peraza will get time because that's kind of how they've set it up. I just don't expect him to hit very well immediately.
Oh yeah, they are both very much not finished products, even finished products for prospects.
I do think that there's an impression, and I don't think it's what Ben was saying, but I do think there's an impression out there that like Peraza, because he saw AA, has like upper minors experience, and he does. But I think it is a useful illustration to put him next to Herrera and say he actually had less than Herrera.
That is fair. So let's be perfectly honest. The second half of this list blows. Is there anyone on the second half of this list that you guys want to talk about?
Can't quit Ricky Weeks, dude. Give me Ricky Weeks.
I was absolutely going to say Ricky Weeks.
Give me all the Ricky Weeks.
I mean, I'll just make the case in that he had two bad seasons, absolutely, 2012, 2013. But even 2012 was a 728 OPS, which wasn't good, especially considering it was a better offensive environment at the time. But prior to that, he had three seasons of OPS plus in the 121 to 125 range. And last year, in 121 games, now it was only 286 plate appearances, he had a 124 OPS. So, I mean, I think health is obviously the big thing with him, and he does miss a lot of time, but I certainly think he can be really useful when he's healthy. So I don't know. I'm still in on him, and he has stopped running almost entirely. So
don't
count on speed, but everything else should be somewhat useful.
I'm still praying he ends up in Toronto on a 1-year
deal.
Same.
I actually thought the Nationals were a really good spot for him before
Escobar
trade.
Anybody still in on Danny Espinosa, speaking of the Nationals? Didn't think Bruh. So. Yeah, he's so bad.
Can't trust the facial hair.
It's tough.
Yeah.
Can't do it.
He was so bad.
Yeah, he was...
It's been a while now, too. He's a few years removed from being interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean he's got the power speed thing, which stays sexy for a while, but there's really not very much hope for him at this point.
Feel the excitement.
Yeah. Anyone want to talk about Logan Forsythe or Devon Travis or Grant Green?
Oof.
Yeah.
I mean, this list really sucks.
I'm a little pissed you have Sean Coyle behind Grant Green and Emilio Bonifacio. I think that's disrespectful.
You could probably make the choice of Sean Coyle.
I'm impressed that Grant Green is on here, but or maybe I just passed over him, but is Beckham not?
Yeah, where's
Beckham as in?
Where's old baseball Gordon? Face? Yeah.
It's Tim. Gordon. Tim.
Yeah, Tim, yeah.
You have to ask. No, I'm done with Beckham.
Agreed.
Agreed. I mean, I'm not advocating him being on the list. I guess I just want Grant Green not on the list also.
At least Beckham has the good hair.
Be able to hit.
Beckham has good hair and baseball face. He's got like the baseball feel face going on. That dude looks like baseball.
I'll throw out one other name, and that's Odubel Herrera, who is probably going to be an outfielder for the Phillies this year, who's a Rule 5 pick. And he had a really nice second half last year, and then he was in the Texas system, and then he also had a tremendous winter season. I think he won MVP of the winter league he was playing in, and he should get some run in Philadelphia since they'll be a really bad team. And he'll probably play outfield, but he'll have second base eligibility, I believe, because that's mostly what he played in the Ranger system. And I think he can probably put up, I mean, if you're talking about like 20 plus team leagues, He's probably worth rostering. because I think he'll do a little something, and he has tremendous bat flips, which is another good aspect too.
That's important.
Does it translate over to American League ball or to stateside ball?
Oh yeah, I watched some of it. I linked actually in my get to know second base prospects. I linked to a minor league home run that he just absolutely bat flipped the shit out of.
Okay, cool. Because sometimes that doesn't come over.
Yeah, no, it's here.
Okay,
it's here to stay.
All right, I'm in. Brett, can you talk about some of your just missed guys?
Nope.
Brett, do you want to play the Jerks and Profar game, or do you want to just move us on?
You guys want to, we can. Otherwise, we'll just move on.
I just want to see you make Craig do it.
All right, so we'll make Craig play a quick version.
What?
But we'll do.
Ben has to play.
Nope.
We'll do the opposite. If you were a contending team and could trade Jerks and Profar for a major leaguer, how high would you go? Would you trade Jerks and Profar for Yoenis Cespedes?
Yes.
Would you trade Jerks and Profar for? Would you trade Jerks and Profar for Matt Adams?
I love this game. I'm not playing.
I don't know. Can Ben answer this one?
Sure, Ben.
I would not. I would keep Profar.
I think I'm leaning that way. I don't know. You say, the thing is, I don't even dislike Matt Adams as a fantasy player, but you say it, and I just make a face like, oh, I don't want that.
Would you trade him for Brian McCann?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, catcher's a weird one because it's team specific. Would you trade him for Brett Gardner?
Can I just tell you that that's a complete blind? So I have no idea what Brett Gardner did last year.
He hit for power.
I have zero idea. I'm going to go look at it right now. Well, he did not hit for average. I'll tell you that much.
Nah, he never does.
I would trade for Brett Gardner.
Even though his eyes are really close together?
Yeah, he's a stupid face.
One last one. Would you trade him for Ryan Zimmerman?
No.
Two guys with shoulder ouchies.
No.
I would. Give me Zimmerman.
I wouldn't.
I think I would.
Yay, Brett.
Oh, we have a split.
Not it's close. Side. That
doesn't feel good. That never feels good, Matt. I'm sorry.
No. All right, so that was the game. I hope everyone had fun. So let's wrap up second base before we get dragged down into the depths here. So
all right, ready for
back
this?
To I'm giving you back the keys.
Well, you're ready for this transition because this is what 4 years of broadcast journalism school will give you. You know what team Ryan Zimmerman plays for, Brett?
I believe he plays for the Washington Nationals, Ben.
Ryan Zimmerman plays for the Washington Nationals, and this very week. That same team, the Washington Nationals, they signed Max Scherzer, Brett. That's what they did. So that's how we're going to lead off our current events.
That broadcasting school really paid off.
Do you hear the diction in there? The passion in my voice? The way I change intonations? It's good. Brett, let's start with you. Scherzer, I'm assuming he's a top 10 fantasy starter for you for 2015?
Yes. I think he might be a top five moving to the National League, but there's going to be a lot of strikeouts involved, possibly up in the 260 to 270 range. It's going to be fun.
I was going to ask you if he was a top five, but okay. Craig, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, Craig. Dynasty League, would you prefer Max Scherzer or David Price?
Oh, that's a good... That's a good one. I'm going to take Price.
No.
I'm going to take Scherzer if I'm winning this year and Price in the long term.
Mao, same question. Do you prefer Scherzer or John Lester to AL to NL transplants?
Scherzer.
Craig, I'm assuming.
Damn. No, I'm going to go Lester.
All right.
Yeah, I'm not even down. The thing is, I actually might flip Mao's answer from, like, Price. I feel like I would take Price this year and Scherzer long-term. But I like Lester's year-to-year consistency. I absolutely concede that Scherzer has a higher ceiling, though.
Craig, Dynasty what? League, Max Scherzer or Chris Sale?
Chris Sale, and it's not particularly close to me.
Mal, I'm assuming I don't have to ask.
Yeah, come on, man.
Come on, bro.
Come on, bro. It's the Condor. Come on, I'm taking the Condor all day.
All right, fair enough. I just want to talk about Strasburg for 1 second before we move on. I know he hasn't been traded yet, but he's the subject of many trade rumors. Hopefully, I would like him to go to the Red Sox for, I don't know, maybe like Renato and Devin Marrero or something. But are you guys hoping to see Strasburg moved, or are you worried that he could be pretty easily moved to a worse contextual situation, and as such, you'd like him to remain a National for right now?
I don't think it really matters. I think if he's good, he's good anywhere.
I will take that, take the subsequent silence as a sign that everyone agrees. All right, so we'll keep moving on the current events train and go with Yovani Gallardo, who has moved from a shitty ballpark in the NL to a shitty ballpark in the AL. Brett, in a 14-team mixed league, would you be comfortable with Gallardo as your number four starter?
Nope.
Craig?
Yeah, I'd probably be fine with it. And I don't like Gallardo, but fourth is not extremely great. I think I'd be okay with it.
No.
It's very difficult because he's Mexican. So it's I've always had a soft spot for Gallardo, and it's just, you know, I'm moving off that train. I'm really transitioning into another phase of my life, a Gallardo less phase of my life, and I think it's just better for both parties. But fourth starter, yeah, I'd be okay. Yeah, I'd be okay with that.
Yep, I agree. He is an okay fourth starter. That's hard to beat that type of praise. Does this move the needle with you on Sardinas at all, now that he has relatively less competition in the middle of the infield?
For me?
Yeah, for you. Why not, Mal? Let's stick with you.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm down with that.
Craig?
No, I don't think it really changes the equation very much. I know it's not the same level of competition, but he's also, I don't know that the Brewers are going to give him time at shortstop because of Gene Segura, and I don't know that he's really a better offensive second baseman than Scooter Jeanette. He's probably fantastic defensively because he's fantastic defensively at short. I just don't think it changes much in the fantasy game because he's not a huge contributor to begin with. So I don't know. I don't think, especially in the short term. Long term, it might help because those guys aren't necessarily in Milwaukee forever, whereas like Andrews was signed forever, but I don't know. I don't think it moves the needle very much.
Do you disagree at all, Brett, or shall I move us along?
No, we can move along. I don't disagree with that.
All right. Brett agrees. The other fairly decent sized trade this week, Dexter Fowler going from Houston to the Cubs. Fowler finished as the 60th best fantasy outfielder last year in standard 5x5 format. Is he in line for a top 50 finish in 2014? Craig. 2015, sorry. Craig.
No.
Mal?
It would be surprising if he did it, so no.
Brett?
I'm going to say no, but I think it is pretty close.
Exciting, guys. This is what...
What do you think?
This is what... I agree with Brett. That's why See, you can't flip it back on me because I'm asking questions that I have trouble answering because I'm assuming other people
That's
have trouble answering.
That's why I flipped it back on you.
Well, you know what, Craig? We're going to have a chat when I get to DC, all right? Yeah. Okay. Dan Straley moving from Chicago to Houston. Does anyone care? Can I move on?
Move on.
Go.
Well, I think it helps him.
Yeah, I do too, but I still don't think he's very good.
Well, it's going to be super confusing to have him on the same team as Brad Peacock.
Wow.
Oh, I think they're dramatically different as pitchers. I mean, Peacock has
thank you for specifying as pitchers.
No, they're obviously different as people, I think. Maybe I don't know. They might be like the same guy. Who knows? I think Straley can stick at the back end of a rotation for years. I think Brad Peacock is a reliever.
I agree with that, but I appreciated Brett's sarcasm more than your real answer.
Well, that's fine.
Okay. Corey Rasmus. No, Colby Rasmus. Which one is it? Colby. Oh, my God. What's the real
Rasmus? There is a Corey.
I know, but I can't remember which one is the good one.
Neither of them?
Well,
Colby. Null set there.
Yeah. Colby Rasmus. Colby Rasmus. He is an outfielder. He is not a pitcher. That's Corey. Colby Rasmus went from Toronto to Houston to strike out in Dexter Fowler's place. Colby Rasmus finished exactly as the 100th best fantasy outfielder in 2014. Brett, will Colby Rasmus be a top 75 fantasy outfielder in 2015?
I'm going to say yes.
Hmm. You know who finished
as the... I don't particularly like him, but yes.
You know who finished as the number 75 fantasy outfielder in 2014?
Edwin Jackson?
George Springer.
Well, Springer played for like 2 months.
I know.
I was going to say, this was brought to my attention recently, and I really didn't realize it. Without looking, what was your guess as to the date of the last game George Springer played last year?
July 20th.
July 8th.
June
30. Wow, okay. Well, I thought it was much later. It was July 18th. Okay. So Brett was extremely close. But in my head, he played like into the second half. I don't know why.
Probably because you're not that smart.
Yeah, I guess I didn't even watch baseball. I guess I was just like, June hit, and I was like, I can check out. I know everything I need to know.
You know,
even say stick to baseball now.
You did already.
I know, but that's null and void. So just stick.
All right.
Yeah.
Stick to sandwiches?
That's certainly not true.
Mm. Yeah.
Can't even. All right, I think we're good.
I'm going to say I don't think Colby Rasmus is going to be a top 115 outfielder.
Ooh, harsh. Oof.
I don't think he's good.
I gathered that from your ranking of
that was no, but that was my analysis.
Maybe you have a future in baseball. I don't know. Maybe I was wrong. No problem. All right, one quick one. I guess we should mention him because Nori Aoki finished as the 51st best outfielder last year, moving from the World Series losers to the World Series winners. If you can't beat them, don't keep trying to beat them and instead rally to their cause. I think that's how the phrase goes. So at number 51 last year, will he be a top 60 option in 2015, Mao?
I'm going to say no. I think the speed's been going backwards for 3 years now. He's over 30. Yeah, average is only going to get you so far. So I'm going to go with no.
Craig?
I wasn't. What was the question? I didn't listen to you.
All right, Brett.
I'm going to say yes. I think he's a National League hitter. I think he bounces back.
Fair enough.
I'm pro Aoki. I don't know the question, but yes.
Thanks, Craig. All right, Craig, you can redeem yourself. We'll make up for you here.
Okay.
Enya finished as the 78th best fantasy catcher in 1997. Will Enya finish as a top 60 option in 2034?
Yes, she's already number one in my heart.
Welcome back to episode 39 of Tino. As always, let's send you out with a little housekeeping. On Wednesday, January 28th, Mao is holding a BP Fantasy Chat at 7 p.m. EST. So get in on that, share your Tino love, and ask him absurd questions. Please rate and review us on iTunes. Every rating and every review helps us tremendously, and we love reading your comments. And now you can check out our sweet new Facebook page, because that's what all the cool kids are doing. You can follow us on Twitter at Tino Podcast and get in touch with us through this email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. You can find Brett at Dynasty Guru. You can find Mauricio at mrubio52. You can find Craig at CD. That's CD as in cauliflower doubter, Goldstein. And you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thank you for listening and have a good night.
That was pretty good because you tied it to the intro in the beginning.
Yeah. By fucking up again?
No.
Totally. Toto?
No.
That's rain in Africa.
Yes. And he has a song called Storm in Africa?
Yeah, Storms in Africa, yeah.
So she's basically a plagiarist.
I mean, yeah, probably. I mean, I felt like we knew that.
I don't think you're allowed to sing songs about Africa without crediting Toto.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
That's just science.
I, you know, you're going to have to take that up with her, to be honest.
Did you guys have, Ben, did you have an answer to the song one? I had to do like last minute research and I thought we were going to answer it.
No, I didn't. But if you want, we can answer it after and that can be like part of our post roll.
Oh, it doesn't matter to me. Yeah. It's just.
No, I have nothing per usual.
Okay.
It's S. We're just going to go with it's S.
Well, it's definitely S. The only thing I was going to bring up potentially was that it might be I, given all the songs that start with like I.
That's a good reason.
Yeah.
No, but you know what I mean? Like the
I love you.
The pronoun?
God,
yeah.
Damn it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I got you.
I will survive.
Plus Imagine by John Lennon.
Yeah.
I think that would be my second answer, but I don't know.
Then again, O Has Only Time by Enya, which is how we probably could have wrapped that up a little more neat.
I feel like we should save that question and answer it at another time.
We'll forget, but we can plan on that.
The answer is T for Thunderstruck, the greatest song of all time.
Really?
I was not expecting that.
Me neither.
Yeah, that's different.
Oh.